Let's start with a content notification, shall we? The Queer Conjure podcast is about queer people, trans people, witches, marginalized communities that have suffered harm. We're going to talk about that stuff. It's going to be a bit shadowy. We're also going to talk about really joyful stuff that some people might consider offensive, like disobeying the state, like having really amazing sex. So if that doesn't sound like what you want to listen to right now, I invite you to go to another podcast. And if it is something you want to listen to right now, buckle up, babies, because here we go. Hello, hello, baby cakes. Welcome to the Queer Conjure podcast. QueerConjure.org is queering the path towards magical liberation. We place the T at the beginning of the acronym. We become inspired by witnessing other trans and queer folk fully living their whole self and diligently care for our community using magical practices and equitable principles. I am Jasper Joy. My pronouns are they, he. I am a genderqueer witch, a tarot scholar, community chemist, Venusian writer, and elder babe. My work is defined by open-hearted ethics, neurodivergent experiences, and a blatant disrespect for the state. Please consider joining our Patreon, patreon.com/queerconjure. It's because of Patreon supporters that I'm managing to get this project off the ground. If you think somebody you know would like this podcast, please do share it with them. And if you have a couple extra minutes, I would love a rating and a review. It is really crowded out here in podcast land, and I'm just getting this started. So your support makes such a difference. Blessed be. Mwah. Hey, I have a question for you. Are you a narrow queer witch? Fabulous, so are we. We believe there is an inherent sacredness connecting queerness, transness, magic, and neurodivergence. Neuroqueer was originally coined by Nick Walker, PhD, as a verb, a way to subvert ourselves from normativity and heteronormativity simultaneously. Queer Conjure's all about that. Queer Conjure's all about subverting the normative and evoking, that's a word now, magical liberation. So if you are a neuroqueer witch, we want to hear from you. Send us an audio recording up to 4 minutes long, describing the ways being a neuroqueer informs your witchcraft. Just email jasperhawthorne@gmail.com, go to queerconjure.org and hit contact us, and give us an attachment of your audio, and we'll share it on the podcast. Blessed be. Mwah.
Coding in progress. I don't know.
Got it.
Hi.
Hello, darling.
Hello, darling. Would you like to introduce yourself and any like important identities that are going on for you right now?
Sure. So my name is Hannah. My last name is Husband, which always trips people out, and I kind of enjoy that. I am recently naming publicly that I'm a non-binary human, though I have known it internally for quite some time. What else? I am a natural redhead. I feel like that's important.
It is so important.
Represent for the gingers.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, and like, I'm a witch. So there's that.
There's that.
Yeah.
That's how we met.
That's true. That's true.
We met over the witchcraft internet.
That was like when I was a baby witch who was like, I'm not sure. Maybe. Do I belong here? How does this work for me?
Wait, was that 3 years ago?
Yeah.
We've
Well,
been.
yeah, I think so. It was like spring, summer 2020, I think. Because
We've
I
been
think it
friends for
was,
3 years.
I love that. And also, what is time?
Absolutely. I'm so excited to talk with you. So before I pull from the Be With Your Body tarot, do you want to kind of summarize like what the body means to you and what it means in like your private practice and your personal practice?
So yeah, it's interesting because this has been on my mind and in my conversational sphere this week with several of my friends. I'll say the other thing that maybe folks want to know about me, I am what I call an extreme extrovert. I have Gemini rising, and I've realized over the course of the pandemic, really, that I need to be in like intimate interaction. Doesn't have to be IRL, but like I need intimate interaction with like 3 to 5 humans a day minimum, or else I am like not well. And I realize this is different for other people because I tend to attract and collect very charming, socially skilled introverts who actually need time alone. And I'm like, I don't understand why you don't want to be in connection with me all of the time. I'm amazing. And also connection is the best. So in my many and various conversations that I cultivate for myself in this like wider social web that keeps me well, I've been really like starting to find language for, well, I don't know. Actually, that's a lie. Language is eluding me a lot. But I've been a person who is working with and interested in and creative about the human body, my own and other people's, for literally all of my life. I started out as a theater artist, but I was always really most interested in like physical forms of theater. So material that is primarily nonverbal, where there's a lot of physical storytelling. And then I got really into stage combat, which is like fake fighting, basically, choreographed fights, choreographed violence. Of course, there's a plane going over now. Thanks. And then that led me into getting certified as a personal trainer. And really, that was from a desire to like want to understand anatomy better so that I could help the theater artists that I was supporting as a like fight captain and choreographer to navigate some of the movements that were required to tell the story in a way that would honor and protect their bodies over the run of the show. And so that kind of got me into like the fitness world, which I
I
am
like
reluctant. I'm such
the
a reluctant member of that world.
air
Like,
quotes.
it's such a problematic world in so many ways, and it's a world that
Yeah.
I really want to like reinvent. But I'm grateful for my time in that world and for the knowledge and fields of study that I've been able to engage with. And so my work now is really about like bridging the magical and the scientific for the purpose of body liberation and like sacred body reclamation, and particularly like reclaiming movement and the ways that movement can nourish our bodies and support our mental health and support our magical practice and support our like sense of ourselves as powerful beings.
Oh, I love that.
So just casually that.
Casually that, casually poetically that. All right. Well, you got the eight of hips. It looks like this.
My gosh. Is that like seaweed in the background? I decided
It
that
does
it
look like seaweed, right?
Yeah.
It probably is because in this deck, hip is cups. So that would make a lot of sense. And there's eight of them.
Yeah.
Eight little seaweeds. And I really like reading from the book so we can get the artist's interpretation.
Yes, please.
Also, this deck comes with affirmations for every card.
Mm.
Exciting. So it's a body walking away from eight plants in different stages of growth.
Mm.
Release, let it go. Eight of Hips knows when it is time to walk away. Sometimes there are things that at one point were helpful or even nurturing to you. Then one day, it is no longer helpful.
When the cards drag you first thing in the fucking morning. Can I swear on this? Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good, because it's going to happen.
It might even now be harmful. This card is a reminder to walk away and release that which is not serving you. This may be temporary or permanent, but what is most important is that you honor your own needs. And the affirmation is, I release what does not honor me. I don't think that card is like you at all. I think this is a terrible pull.
Little do you know, it is spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you relating to the eight of Hips or cups at this moment?
Yeah, so before we got on record, you asked me how I was doing, and I was like, I'm a mixed bag. And the deeper answer to that is that I'm here in New Hampshire visiting some very dear friends in this like long awaited kind of friend reunion. I keep calling it adult summer camp, basically. And since sometime last night, I've just had so much sadness in my body, like existential sadness, where you're just like, nothing matters. It's all going to be shit. And I'm like, why do I feel like, I was not expecting to feel like that here in this context with this amount of like relational input, which is generally like my jet fuel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the other truth is that I have a, you know, I've been having these difficult interactions with my mother. And I forget what the first thing you read was, but something about like, it may have been nurturing at one time, but now I was like. Because I've been really trying to maintain that relationship with the boundaries that I need for me to be well. And I'm not finding that path. So I'm in an inquiry right now around like, what amount of contact can I say yes to without like tanking myself, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting your own needs first. Yeah. In a compassionate way too. Like,
yeah.
I think the easiest way to enforce a boundary is to just leave, you know, like make literal space, either communication or physical. And yeah, asking yourself like, what amount of communication can I allow in order to stay safe is a really compassionate way to look at that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. I'm sorry about the sadness, babe.
It's okay. I think it's, you know, it is what it is. Feelings just are.
Yeah.
There was something you said that pinged a thing and then it just went out of my brain. We were also talking last night at dinner about like, what was the thing when you were growing up that was like the worst thing you could be?
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was like, oh, it was a spoiled brat. And I was like, oh, interesting. Like mine was selfish. And so I think there's this way that like putting my own needs first or like prioritizing what I need in intimate relationship. The fear is that that will make me selfish, which is, you know, mythologically, according to my family of origin, the worst thing you can be. I love how we just get right into it also. We're like, let's not do small talk. Let's just get in.
Yeah, let's just dive into fucking shark-infested waters. Yeah, I'm having a lot of similar things come up where, like, I'm realizing that I have a lot of anxious attachment. And despite the fact that I've had so much growth and so much healing and a lot of time, I feel really confident and really good in my body. I still have a really hard time naming desires and naming what I want. And that comes from the same belief of like the worst thing I could possibly be is selfish. And like when I think that thought, it's literally in my mother's voice. So yeah, I'm feeling that so hard for you.
Oh, babe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes the most important, most liberating thing for us to be is the thing we were told is the worst thing. Like you were saying, what is the worst thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that connection to being able to name our desires, I think is so vital. And like, that's been a big learning curve for me over the last year. When did I start? I guess it started coming up really strongly last fall. I was like, oh, I can't. It's really hard for me to know what I want or to like have a vision for my work in the world or my like, you know, art that I want to make or my livelihood or whatever you want to call it.
No, my dog is acting berserk. Sorry. Oh,
that's okay. And I was having a chat with my friend who's also a coach and very intuitive. And she was like, this sounds like authentic desire work to me. And I was like, ew. Ooh. And also, what's that?
Ooh, what is that?
So, essentially, authentic desire work is just like a practice of starting to tune into and claim internally our desires. And a big piece of learning that was freeing to me in that process was realizing, like I was realizing that part of the block to me in naming a desire was that I felt like if you name a desire and you don't know exactly how you're going to make it happen, you are automatically making it someone else's responsibility.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh, that's an interesting snarl. And so part of the practice that I worked with that was helpful was just like writing on a piece of paper that I could crumple up and throw away anything that came into my head that I wanted or desired. Mm-hmm. And really kind of like encouraging myself and being like, yeah, what else? What else do you want? What else? Yeah, yeah. And then also being like, okay, and none of those matter. I don't have to take action on them. They don't have to become to-do list items. Like, it's okay to name things that we want and do nothing else about it. Like, that was a really important stage for me to like allow.
Oh my goodness. I love this. I'm seeing this as like, so part of my spiritual practice is meditation. And when I notice anxiety or panic or fear come up in my body, I just pause and notice it. And I don't try to do anything about it. Right. I'm like, this can just be, and it's okay for it to just be.
Yeah.
And the idea around that is that the more acceptance you have for that thing, the more it has permission to move on. Yeah. I never thought about doing that with desire though. That's so cool.
Right. But especially if you're noticing that it's hard to even access your desires, I found giving them that same permission to just exist, but not have to move into the action stage, was really freeing, and suddenly like a lot of desires started bubbling up, like in
So
all kinds
much.
of life categories. And it was just like, oh, like there's a lot of shit under there that I haven't been noticing. But it felt terrifying at first. I both felt like I had discovered this like enormous deficiency, like, oh, I can't name my desires. And then also, oh, I lost the second part of that. But anyway, there was some self-judgment right away for sure.
I do know. Yeah, one of my practices is to so I have a small cauldron on my altar that I use every new moon and full moon, and during the in-between stages, if there are like things that I want or things I'm struggling with or like things I hope to manifest in the next moon phase, I'll write them on a little piece of paper and put them in the cauldron, and then they can just like exist upon my altar. And then, each moon phase, I'll burn them and I'll let the smoke go up to the moon, and I'll be like, I am offering this up to, I'm offering this up to the goddess right now.
So I have often cringe around the word manifestation and manifesting. And I feel like I'm coming into a new relationship with it. And the part that helps it feel not cringy to me is this idea that, like, it's a co-creation, right? I bring the desire and the intention, and then I surrender to co-creating with the unseen and the unknown. Like, I don't get to know exactly how the things that I desire are going to come into fruition, because we don't have control. But what I
That's a
do,
hard truth to swallow.
you know what I'm saying? Yes, the perfectionist parts of me hate that reality, but that is transmuting quickly. But what I do have ownership over, like my part, my accountability in that manifestation relationship, is getting clear on what I want. Like, only I can do that job. Nobody else can do that job.
So this authentic desire work, is this why you're leaning into? First of all, I want to say that when you sent me a text that was like, oh, hey, hi, I'm queer and non-binary, I was like, ah! I was so excited. I was like squealing and jumping up and down. And my partner was like, what the fuck is happening?
You're like, another one has joined us.
And also, like when we first met, I was so drawn to you, and I was like, this person is my friend. And I'm like, I don't usually feel this way about straight people. So,
God, hilarious. Yeah. I definitely felt drawn to you too. So Jasper and I were in a group class that met on Zoom, and there were like little like, I think it was even before we got put in a breakout room together, though. I just was like, who are you're my friend. Like, we're friends, right? We've known each other forever. Okay, cool. Never met you before in real life. Still haven't.
Yeah, but I do feel like you're one of my like I kind of think it as think it. I kind of think it as like we all have soul kin, and I feel like you're part of my soul kin fam.
Yep, same.
So even if we are never like physically in the same room, I feel really like I feel that close connection all the time.
Yeah, same. And I love that we can go long stretches of not even communicating via text or, tangible means of communication, and I still feel that connection so strongly.
Yeah, I do too.
Like, I feel like my longest running and most intimate friendships have that quality of like, we're not keeping track of the time in between connection points, and there's no loss of intimacy. Like, there's lots to catch up on, sure, but there's no loss of intimacy and like that sense of like belonging. even if it's been like a couple months or whatever. That feels really important to me too, because like, again, I collect charming introverts. So I know that a lot of my people, my closest people, need long stretches where they are less in connection. And I think a lot of times folks feel judged for not like maintaining a particular cadence of relating.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it feels important to me to like really affirm that like, I don't require that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you were talking about me texting you to be like, hello, surprise.
Yeah.
And then we went on a fun side quest.
What was the light bulb moment for you?
Okay. So I just wrapped my third season of creation with this beautiful community called Coven of Creativity. I don't know if I've talked to you about Coven.
Yeah, you have.
So my friend Azalea and Kelsey co-tend this beautiful kind of witchy creativity incubator program, I guess. It's an online program. And what was it, the fall season? Yeah. So we just wrapped spring season. They do like a 12-week season of creation twice a year. And the idea is that you like get to show up and be in relationship with a creative project. And they take a really like animist lens to that. So you do a meditation to like meet the soul of your project, and you ask it like, why did you choose me and why now? And what do you need from me? And how can I romance you and like invite you into our co-creative workspace? And like people are working on all kinds of things, which is super cool. Like everything from like redecorating their new house to creating a podcast to making plant portraits for people, like, right? Like, just like, I'm just so blown away by the creative things that humans come up with. But anyway, so not this past season, but the one before in the fall, my friend Sam was in for his first season. And he like asked the facilitators if there could be a separate call to kind of talk about queering our craft. Because he was noticing that, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious on the Instagram/internet that like a lot of the times when we have that intersection of witchy and creative, the image or the human that comes to mind is like a white cis woman who's like wearing a black dress and like doing artsy shit on Etsy. and so we got this first like queering the craft circling call together, and they opened it up and they were like, this is open to allies if you're just curious and you want to show up. And so I was like, I'm gonna go be an ally. And then like, so we were all invited to just like share sort of like, why are you here and what are you hoping to receive from this like container that we're creating together? And like person after person after person, all of these people who I like know at this point, because we've been in the season together for a few weeks, are saying some version of like, I know I'm like really femme presenting, but like, I think I might be non-binary and like, and or like bi, but I'm in this like cis hetero presenting monogamous relationship, so does it even count and does it matter, and like, can I claim queerness and like blah blah blah. There were like five of us on this call that had like eight people on it that were like in that some version of that story. And Sam, who'd kind of called it together, was like, yes, you count, you're welcome here. You don't have to do anything about it. You don't have to come out. You don't have to tell anybody, but like own it internally if it feels good, and allow yourself to change later if you need to. And so that just like started this whole kind of internal excavation process. And then one of my besties from high school, shared with me that they are discovering themselves as non-binary and also in a similar, like, similar situation to me. Like, we've both been with our cis man partners slash husband, in their case, for, you know, 15 to 18 years. And we ended up having some really interesting conversations where they were like, I just don't know if it's worth saying anything at 40. Like, there's this fear, there was this fear that emerged that I share of, like, is anyone going to believe me if I come out as, like, non-binary? Like, is anyone going to believe that? Like, this feeling of having to sort of prove what's true in the internal world. And the more that I sat with it, the more I was like, no, I've always known this about myself. Like, I've always felt squidgy when being labeled a girl or a woman. It always has felt incomplete, like, not wrong, just like incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always tacked that on to, like, so my mother was very, like, early 80s feminist pagan vibes, like, reclaiming mm-hmm. the sacred feminine. And in many ways, like, women are better than men, and ugh, we have to deal with them, like, mm-hmm. that kind of, like, kind of vibe. And
yeah, putting the womb on a pedestal.
Yes, so much, so much. And the sacredness of our moon time, and, like, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, whoa. And I thought it was because it was, like, too woo-woo, and that was not the peer circle that I was running in. And so I thought I was distancing myself from that so that I could, like, you know, just A, be my own person, and B, like, not be ostracized socially. Because, again, social connection, lifeblood. But as I've been allowing my non-binariness to be true internally, I've, like, looked back through all these moments and just recontextualized them and being like, oh, no, I felt like I was being misgendered and, like, not seen. Like, that's actually what was happening, but I didn't have language for it, you know? Like, I grew up in the Bay Area, so it was very, like, gay, lesbian, I bi, but do we believe in that? Like, and it was very, like, pick a side kind of vibes. And I got accused of being a lesbian, both as just a way to, like, you know, people tease you about whatever.
Right.
And so I think I performed heterosexuality, like, even harder to kind of be like, you can't label me, which I think was really just like, I didn't have anything against my lesbian friends or my gay friends. It wasn't that I didn't want to be associated with queer people. It was more just like, how dare you tell me what I am? Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would, like, make out with girls, but in a, like, performative way, always in front of boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was a ramble.
I love that ramble, though. I am here for the ramble.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as I've been turning into an aging queer, I hear people that are like, you know, if I had known the word non-binary in my 20s, that's what I would have been. And I'm like, yeah. You're not dead yet, sweetie.
Yes.
You can still be you.
Yeah.
And, like, you kind of touched on this part about queerness feeling like gatekeeping, like you have to be queer enough, like you have to show your credentials somehow.
Yeah.
And I think that there was kind of a good intention behind that in the first place, where as a community of marginalized, ostracized people, we were carving out our own space, like our own sacred queer space.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became gatekeeping for sure. And, like, we lost the idea of, like, the fact that queerness is so nuanced. Like, that's the whole point, is you can't really define it, but, like, having this abrasive experience with the status quo is what queer people feel. And that's what you just described, you know, with your mom's kind of white feminist witchcraft.
Yep.
Yeah, and I also think it's a, like, queerness, not for everybody, but for me, queerness is a spiritual dedication to nonconformity. And
fuck yeah.
I love that you're talking about relational input being your jet fuel, because I just did this whole project of, like, what are my values? Because I need to make sure I live within them. You know, the lovers is my life card. And oh, really?
Literal same.
We're the same person.
I love you.
And it's so funny because I found that my highest value is intentional social connection and dedication to nonconformity. And I'm like, yeah, this is like, this is our soul kinship right here. I love it.
Yeah.
One of the things I love talking to you about is animism. Because you have such a wonderful, like, I think you were the first person to suggest to me that creative ideas had a soul, had their own autonomous thing going on.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been obsessed with that idea ever since.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So go.
Well, first of all, I want to lure you into the next season of Coven of Creativity based on that. But, So Coven has been a huge coming out place for me. I also realized I have ADHD within Coven. Yeah. So I've been on a whole, like, neuro spiciness reclaiming journey as well, which has been super affirming.
Ooh, neuro spicy. I love that.
Hat tip to my friend Kate from that, for that, New York Kate. Oh wait, there was something else too. Oh yeah, but the animism, I mean, that really came from Coven for me. And so I just want to really, like, honor and thank, like, Kelsey and Azalea for bringing that into my life. But lots of people talk about it too. What was the book we read? Oh, have you read Big Magic?
Mm-hmm.
It was Gilbert, right? Yeah. So she kind of talks about that too.
Yeah.
This idea that, like, your ideas or your projects have their own life and they want to come through you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll be patient and wait for you to be ready. And other times they'll be insistent. And if you wait too long, sometimes they move on to some other host.
Yeah.
And for me, that has been really freeing because, you know, one of my, like, coping strategies from early life was this, like, perfectionism and control sort of way of being, which also, like, nests in with that kind of hyper-individualism mythology that we're all swimming in, that, like, I'm gonna make art, but I'm gonna make it and it's all on me. And that, like, doesn't actually track. Like, even when I think back to my early days of making theater, like, I felt like when I was doing my best acting, I was channeling the character or something. And my first love in theater was Shakespeare. And so there was this feeling of, like, I'm just making myself available to this poetry to move through me and with me. Like, this isn't, I'm not I mean, there's a role that I play, right? I have to, like, you know, attune my vessel and, like, do things to prepare myself so that I can be, like, available and embodied and, like, ready to channel. But it was always a sense of, like, co-creation and partnership with this, like, you know, these words. That's really nice to connect, actually. I don't think I'd put those things together. Also, one of my favorite theater teachers early on when I was like 12, 13, P.S., the show I was working on with this theater teacher was Twelfth Night, and I was playing Sir Andrew, so like in drag. No shade
Yes.
there. And I like loved it. It was so freeing to like occupy masculinity in that way with like so much permission and encouragement. But anyway, Jessa, who was the one of the co-directors of that show and had been one of my teachers from this like awesome Shakespeare summer camp that I did. One of the invocations basically that she would use to start rehearsal was this quote from Martha Graham to Agnes DeMille. Do you know that one? There is a vitality, a quickening, a life force that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, that expression is unique. If you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and be lost. Anyway, so it's this like, that's been in my consciousness from an early age in my young life as an artist. And so I always found like comfort and solace in that idea of like, okay, all the things that are weird and quirky and imperfect about me are part of what shape my unique vessel. And there is like a life force, a creative soul that like wants to be expressed through me. Or as I now understand it, there are many. As I sort of think of each project or each creation as having its own unique soul. And so my role as an artist and a human and a maker of things is to like partner with those souls. And it just invites, and again, like thank you, Coven, for this framework. Like always spend a whole week just being like, how does your project want to be romanced? How can you call them in? Do you want to make them a playlist? Do you want to have a certain scent that you wear? Do they want to be taken on walks or taken out to dinner or like poured a glass of red wine? And like just this idea that we can like really embody a lot of like eros and playfulness and flirtiness as a way to like draw these projects closer to us. And really like invite co-creation versus that kind of like, okay, you gotta rip it out of the ground and just like, it's on you and like, ugh.
Oh my gosh. I think that what you're describing is a really beautiful, like, the difference between uniqueness and individualism. And I think that's such an important thing to look at. Because, like, one of the things that I was using to try to get over individualism is like, I'm actually not special. But, like, I only mean that in the sense of like, I am going through this hard thing, but I'm not the first person to go through this hard thing.
I love this. And this is something that comes up in my work around bodies a lot. And part of the reason I'm leaning more towards doing group work versus one-on-one work, because it's a nuanced truth that the way we each experience, like the pain of the rejection of our bodies, that is the culture we are raised in, like we experience that very uniquely. And most folks carry a story that their body is wrong or unacceptable in a very particular way that no one else has ever experienced. So it must be me. I must be wrong. And what I've been noticing as I've been facilitating more group work is that when we create enough safety that people can really bring that forward and voice it and name it, two things happen. One, you hear it out loud and you go, oh, I don't know if I believe that. Because it's not just rattling around in your head anymore. And two, everyone around you goes, oh, yeah. And often people will also be bold and meet you and say, I feel something similar. Mine has this flavor and this shape, but like there's a certain like same that happens. And that same thing for me is the fastest way up and out of shame, the pit of shame, and the fastest way to reorient and go, oh, I'm not wrong and broken. The way society is wrong and broken, but we're paying an individual cost, right? This is a systemic issue that affects everyone. And we each feel it uniquely, but there's power in collectively sharing the ways that we are uniquely harmed so that we can all see that the culprit is the culture, not the thing we think we need to fix about our bodies.
Same, will be. I love that.
Yeah.
Shame will banish shame. Same will banish shame. It's also a tongue twister, so that's a little extra fun. I believe I've had similar experiences when you were saying you were channeling as acting. In my 20s, I used to do these performance rituals. So it was a little odd because we were literally performing ceremony in front of people, which is not exactly what ceremony is for, but it was in a very educational community building way. And I used to call it performance ritual blackout because people would come up to me later and be like, I love the way you did this, or I love the way you did that, or said this. I'm like, I don't remember doing
don't
that.
Don't remember.
And it was because I was, you know, I was in my body, but I had stepped aside to let that channeling happen. And that still happens when I read tarot sometimes. Like, they'll be like, I love when you said this to me 6 months ago. I'm like, did I?
Totally.
Yeah,
I experienced that a little bit. I feel like the more that I have named and claimed that ability to channel, the more I'm able to keep some amount of the conscious witness online so that I can also remember it later. And also, I think this is part of my like neurospiciness, like my superpower is being fully present in the now moment. And then the next now moment, and then the next now moment. So sometimes things don't travel with me from one to the other.
Yeah. This is why I lose my coffee cup 30 times a day.
That's right. This is why I need a stage manager for my life.
I am curious about what sort of, like, how are you experiencing the soul of your gender, the soul of your queerness, the soul of what types of relationships you want?
Whoa, what a potent inquiry. I don't think I've thought about it like that, but I will now. It's interesting. So what bubbles up first, which is related but not maybe a direct answer, is that as I've been, again, mostly during the internal affirmation phase of like, okay, I am a non-binary human. Like, that is true. I didn't have language for it until now, but that really feels right. I've had this sense of like, oh, like my soul, my beingness is a gender expansive being. And I am walking through this world in this lifetime in like a woman's body. And I've had so much more tenderness towards the like, especially like feminine, or what our culture labels as feminine parts of my body. And it's completely shifted. How do I want to say this? So I had a lot of body dysmorphia growing up, which I always thought was just, you know, oppressive beauty standards, trying to be an actress, which like turns the crank on that pretty intensely. Growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, which was like, you know, thin, 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 which I've just, you know, is not my body type. And now, again, it feels like that has been recontextualized in this way of like, oh, like I always, I don't know what the words are, but I'm realizing that that sort of disconnect, that feeling of like, I think the need to be critical of and control the appearance of my body actually had something to do with like trying to source enough safety, because I knew that I was a fucking weirdo on the inside. I say that with love.
Oh, absolutely.
And that in a way has felt relieving. And I would say, like, as I permissioned internally my non-binariness to just be a fact of my being, right on the heels of that was like, oh, and also you're queer. Like, it's cute that you thought you were just like a cool, edgy, straight girl, but like, no. No. And then on the heels of that was like, oh, and P.S., like, you were never meant to be monogamous. Like, and like literally I have said that out loud in my early 20s, my now partner of 18 years, like we had conversations about that in our early courtship where I was like, yeah, I don't know. Monogamy seems like arbitrary and weird to me. Like, I don't know why people draw the line at sex. I don't know why people expect that one human is going to give them everything they need. Like, that doesn't track for me. And he was very like open and curious to that. And then we like broke up and got back together a couple of times. And by the time we got into the container that is our now relationship, we just sort of defaulted into monogamy. We didn't actually have like a conscious conversation around relational design. And so in the last like few months, I've been like, oh, A, that has never felt like what's like the right container of relationship for me. But B, here I've been in this like, you know, default state for the last literally 18 years. Our relationship turns 18 in July. And now I'm really desiring to like redesign our relationship. And I think I've always felt this, and we've, you know, he and I have talked about it a lot, like that one of our values, shared values, is growth, like allowing ourselves to grow and evolve and actually encouraging each other to grow and evolve. Like, I want him to grow into the truest, most authentic form of himself in each now moment. And I understand that that means we might grow into like authentic forms of ourselves that don't make sense to be in relationship anymore. And that's always been something that I think we've held with nuance and tenderness. And it gets complicated because you like, you know, buy a house together and like entwine your shit. And then you're like, I don't know where that was going. I think I've just trailed off now.
I really like what you said about the default space and kind of like getting stuck in that groove. And I just want to validate that we do that because that default space is the safest place we can go.
Yeah.
In terms of like protecting ourselves from harm or bigotry or oppression. Right.
That's right. I can walk down the street holding my babe's hand and like no one says anything. If anything, people are like, oh, you guys are so cute, like and they assume we're married and they assume that we probably have kids that we're just not parading around, and like none of that is true, but like we have a lot of assumed safety. which was something that came up in some of the Queering the Craft circles. Like, there were many of us that were like, given that we have this assumed safety and so much sort of like privilege in a way, like, just, I don't know, there's some stickiness or some yuckiness around claiming a queer identity from such a fortress of perceived safety. And so that definitely held me back from being more public about my internal identities for a while. And then I just, like, I don't know, I like turned a corner and was like, but wait, like, I know there are other people that like present similarly to me in terms of their identity, their perceived identity and their relationship perceived mm-hmm. identity, who are queer as fuck. And like, mm-hmm. at this point I'm like, okay, I'll be the one to be like, hi, I exist. This is an option. You know, like, in case anybody was wondering and feeling curious, like, maybe you too. It's the gay agenda.
It's the gay redhead agenda is what it is.
The gay ginger agenda.
My nesting partner is a ginger, and I realized that over the years as we're together, like, I've never had a physical type before, but almost now every time I see a redhead, I'm like, hey.
We are compelling. We are an acquired taste, but once you start, it's hard to go back.
Once yeah. you go red. Yeah. Well, how can people find you on the internet?
So I'm at Hannah Husband on Instagram. That's where I share with the most regularity. I also have a newsletter that I send out weekly-ish called Body Liberation Love Notes.
And it's really good.
Oh, thank you, darling. I love when you reply to them. I'm always like, oh, we're here. We're in connection. Mm-hmm. And then my website is hannahhusband.com, and you can find all the ways to work with me or be supported by me or join one of my group offerings. I'm hosting my first retreat this fall, which we didn't even talk about, and I do have to jump off in a couple minutes, but a long life dream of mine has been to host retreats. Again, IRL connection, very like juicy to me. And so I'm co-hosting it with my friend Britta, who is an introvert. And so we're co-crafting it to be like introvert friendly and extrovert friendly in a very like conscious way. But we're calling it the Embodied Intuition Retreat. So we're gonna explore witchy practices and ritual and movement invitations that help each of the participants connect to what their intuition feels like, sounds like, looks like. And then we also have some like, so like the retreat is like a weekend in November, but we're gonna do a like gathering circle on Zoom beforehand so that people can like know something about each other before they all show up in the desert. And then we're gonna have some integration circles on Zoom afterward, so that we can support each other to integrate what we discovered at the retreat portal into our lives.
That is a beautiful idea, because I've had like lots of workshops and retreats and conventions, and afterwards I just have this drop.
Yeah. You know?
But I love the idea of like having post-care meetings. That's a really great idea.
Yeah.
I think many people should do that.
Yeah, that one came through as Britta and I were like, just visioning into what would feel juicy. And I was like, I hate how like you go to a thing and you're like so enlivened by it, and then like a month later you're like, what happened? Am I doing any of the things? Was that real? Because it can be, right? It's such an elevated, dreamy space to be in, and I think that's really potent. We need that kind of ceremony. And how do we actually weave that into like everyday practical magic that supports us in our like day-to-day life, like our pedestrian shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's on my website too. And there will be like, it's on this beautiful ranch in Arizona. So there's like horses and mini horses and donkeys and goats and a giant trampoline. And like, it's going to be so juicy.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I love you. Thank you for doing this with me.
I love you. Thanks for having me on. Also, the last tarot reading I did with you, like,
yeah. I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a pivotal moment. So thank you.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Hi, this is Ava. My pronouns are they, she, and he, and I'm Queer Conjure's conduit of organization, amongst other things. I specialize in anchoring ideas into fully-fledged works. You can find out more about my offerings and see if we can make a good fit at the Queer Conjure website under About Us at queerconjure.org and book a free 30-minute consultation. Bye!
I have something to tell you. I am a book nerd and a bit of an anarchist. You might have noticed already. And that is why I am so deeply honored to be an affiliate of Firestorm Books. Firestorm Books is a collectively owned radical bookstore and community event space in Asheville, North Carolina. Since 2008, Firestorm Books has supported grassroots movements in Southern Appalachia while developing a workplace on the basis of cooperation, empowerment, and equity. If you go to queerconjure.org and on the upper menu bar, there's a link labeled books. You just click that link to browse a list of my, Jasper, favorite books. Anything you purchase through that link will return 10% back to me to support the creation of this podcast. So say you buy a book for $30, Firestorm sends me $3. Firestorm's mission is to demonstrate the feasibility and desirability of a workplace based on free cooperation. They seek to sustain and nourish their collective through fulfilling work, personal empowerment, and equitable compensation while providing a hub for anarchist thought and culture in WNC.